David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 295. I'm your host, Steve Raker, coming at you from the comic book bunker, along with Whirlwind X Kevin, up in the North Hinterlands.
I'm all prepping for TCAF, but by the time anyone hears this, I'll have already come back.
Maybe by then it'll be spring up there, too.
Maybe. Anything's possible.
We're hoping that the NSA allows Andrew to connect with us from LAX. He is traveling cross-country to surprise his mom for Mother's Day. Marvel Noise is the podcast sponsored by nobody. You can find us on iTunes and all the usual podcasting places. And MarvelNoise.com has archives of old episodes, and I'm working on an updated list of my bits over the years that we can post somewhere so you can... have a skeleton key to that archive, and you can listen to us on our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise. We have Facebook pages and Twitters for both. This episode, we do not have a regular Power Man Iron Fist or Thunderbolts feature for you. This one, we're flying by the seat of our pants because of everyone being in flux and transition. But we'll be back to doing the Power Man Iron Fist. I think we're up to our potentially penultimate Power Man Iron Fist segment, doing 85 through 92, because we got to make it up to 100. That was my goal. My secondary goal, once we hit the initial goal of getting to 75.
So what do you think the Thunderbolts goal was? Like, we just keep on passing, like, goalposts. It's like...
all the way to the end, buddy. All the way to the end.
Dark Avengers? Till issue 190, final issue?
Till Bagley does that cover with the girls and Zemo again. Wasn't that towards the end, if not the last issue? Gotta be close to it.
Yeah, that's pretty close. That's probably issue, like, maybe 170. It's a weird one, because Moonstone's hand is, like, going down. It's kind of a weird... it's a weird cover.
And speaking of Mother's Day, I'm thinking about some of the Marvel U moms who we should send some shout-outs to. Of course, there's Sue, right? The Invisible Woman. She's the mother of all mothers.
Yeah. After all the things that Reed says to her in those first 100 issues.
Does that count? Because she's not even in the Marvel U right now, is she?
Well, aren't they still rebirthing the... oh, maybe that's not the proper word. Reborning, all newing the Marvel Universe.
How about Jessica Drew? She's a new mom, and those storylines have been pretty good with her as the mom and with the baby and stuff, and yeah. the doctor appointment she had with all of the aliens and stuff. That was pretty good. And her proxy for a while when she was out of the picture, but they wouldn't let Bendis use her. Jessica Jones. She's also a mom, right?
Yeah.
She's got the cage baby.
The cage baby. Danny.
Then there's Jubilee. Vampire Jubilee. She's a mom. Happy Mother's Day, Jubilee.
You're still a vampire, oddly enough.
Thanks for making Kitty feel old. In the X-World 2, Mystique. She's a mom. The Rogue is... she's like a adopted mom for Rogue, but... she was Nightcrawler's mom.
Wasn't she supposed to be like the real mom at one point, or they were going to do that?
Yeah, they swapped it up though and went with the Nightcrawler.
Yeah, and then I guess that other X-Men alternate reality thing, she was the mom.
And partial X-Men married was the Wasp, right? Janet. She had a baby not too long ago in the future with Havoc. And then it got taken away, the whole future. And then they were like, no. You can still make this baby happen if you do this now with him. And then the Axis thing happened, and Havoc went bad.
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen.
That was good Kang stuff.
There's some bad ones, like Wanda, the Scarlet Witch. She was a mom for a while with the Vision, but that ended up being pulled out from under her. Mary Jane Watson, she was a mom for a hot minute until Norman took the baby away. Unless you're reading the Renew Your Vows series, she's a mom straight up there, right?
Yeah, I guess so. But it's not the same as the MC2.
Cable's mom was Madeline Pryor. Not such a good mom. Oh, Immortus, Kang. His mom was Carol Danvers in that creepy Avengers 200.
Well, why do you bring that up, Steve?
He was, what the heck was his name? It was something, Marcus or something. Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was really weird.
Some other recent ones, Tigra. She's a mom. Julia Carpenter. I don't know if she's still a superhero or not, though. Is she Spider-Woman? Is she Madam Web? What is she? Is she anything?
I thought she was involved with the web recently.
Cannonballs, Smasher, the Shi'ar, Imperial Guard. She's a mom. And Medusa and Crystal? Man, there are a lot of moms in the Marvel Universe.
There should be.
And even Mother Earth, right? The Asgardian, the Norse god personification of Mother Earth, was Odin's mistress. Exactly. So happy Mother's Day to all those moms in the Marvel Universe. We know your kids are safely tucked. It's 10 o'clock at night. Do you know where your children are? I got my DCBS box today because I have the mid-month thing. So I get it like on the Friday after the Wednesday they send it. So like they just sent it and I just got it 2 days later, which is great. A couple of things to mention, though, I gotta point out. A couple of trade collections. I got the Spider-Man Lifeline Tablet Saga trade paperback, which reprints some John Romita, Jim Mooney with Stan writing stuff of Amazing Spider-Man 68-75. It's the Silvermane stuff with the tablet and all that. And then it also includes the Lifeline 3-issue limited series from the 90s that Steve Rude did with Fabian Nicieza. Or Nicieza, I should say. I always add an N in there. Sorry, Fabian. But with that and the Rude stuff that revisited that storyline put together, I thought, oh, that'd be a nice little trade. It was reasonably priced. And as I'm going through it, it's really funny. And the Steve Rude stuff is 3 issues long. And on the second to last page of the second issue, for the next 32 pages or so, it's the rest of the trade paperback printed upside down and backwards.
What?
Swear to God. So it's like the end of the back matter upside down right before the climax last 2 pages of issue 2 of the Nicieza Rude stuff. But then, if you flip all the way to the end of that, it goes right side up again, and they go right where they left off. You get those last 2 pages of issue 2, and then you get the whole issue 3 and all the back matter all the way to the end. So somewhere along the line, someone noticed it and were just like, ah, just leave it in.
it must cost extra money, but I'm like, what if you got an unrelated trade paperback put inside of that trade paperback? Then you'd be like, double trade.
Well, it was weird because there was a thing happening where Spidey was on the ceiling and jumping to the floor and pulling the web out from under the guy and making him kind of flip. And I thought maybe that, you know, they were being clever and having a little upside down sequence, but no such thing. Hey, a great Marvel Masterworks arrived. Doctor Strange Volume 8. And this is finally getting to, at the end, it's the Chris Claremont stuff, issues 38 to 45, and then issue 46, which is the beginning of Roger Stern's run. So the next Masterworks is going to be the Stern stuff, solid, which I'm really looking forward to. But this has a lot of Gene Colan stuff. It's got Marvel Fanfare, the Marshall Rogers drawn Marvel Fanfare issue. I think it was like issue 5. And it's got the Michael Golden issue. That is the Roger Stern issue, number 46, has the Frank Miller cover. But what's really cool is the back matter. The back matter, almost the entirety of the back matter, although they also include the double page original art for the wraparound cover of the Marvel Fanfare. That's Rogers and Austin, which is fantastic. Nice and yellowed, too, so it really looks like a piece of original art. But the whole rest of the back matter is the is a reprint of the 1980 Marvel Comics calendar, which was all Doctor Strange-themed every month, which is great. And they have the facing page with the calendar page, too. So you get to see all the goofy little calendar entries and the pictures of the bullpen guys and when people's birthdays are and stuff. And then you get to see new images of the, of Doc. Some of them I've seen reprinted. Some of them have been, like, lost to history just because they're from this calendar and we haven't seen them otherwise.
Cool extras.
Yeah, that's a great one. There's a great Defenders by Pollard and Joe Sinnott. Really good. And then the other gem of my box was the Monsters Marvel Monsterbus Volume 1. It's an omnibus of a whole bunch of the Journey into Mystery, Strange Tales, Tales of Suspense, monster stuff. So good. It's got Googum in there. It's got everybody you want. This is a fantastic collection. The next one will be good, too. And what's really sweet, one of the things, reason I mentioned it, and it, I noticed it right away because the dust jacket was slightly off of the vertical axis so that part of the, you know, actual hardcover was sticking through underneath. And the hardcover underneath is beautifully printed with full-color old art. Looks like a Lichtenstein thing. It's just a big close-up from a panel of a big monster face and people shouting on the back. But the spine is all full color and has monsters all in color, and it has the, it's really nice. It's like, man, almost don't need the dust jacket here.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just the foil embossed title on them, which is fine, but this, that's sharp. If they're going to start doing that with the omnibuses, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you can just toss off the dust jacket. I know some people just toss them out anyways, but
really?
They're just like, get that out of my house. Oh, jeez.
But what's going to keep the dust off your book?
I don't know. Maybe they're bagging and boarding them. You know, some people do that.
The hardcovers?
Yeah. Or then they put the little post-it notes, like, between the two covers, because they think they'll be, in a few years, like, it, there's too many pages so that the book would start to sag and separate from the spine.
Ah, man.
There's a lot of OCD people out there.
If it's square bound or a hardcover, it's got to go on a shelf, I'm afraid. Sorry. It's been decided. The living tribunal hath spoken.
The three faces. You know, that's one guy we haven't seen in any of the movies. Like, there's been crazy stuff in the Marvel movies, but we haven't seen anything like that crazy.
In Doctor Strange, the staff of the Living Tribunal was mentioned.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And it got pretty big when we got to see a Celestial on that video screen in the first Guardians movie marching around shooting lasers out of his head. I mean, that was pretty great. That was pretty big. Yeah. Although they seemed to water that down in my mind when in the recent Guardians 2 movie they tie in by saying that the villain is a Celestial himself. Like, I was like, oh, no. Yeah, no, Ego's not a Celestial. He's a big floating planet head.
Yeah, but I guess he could be.
In this cinematic universe.
Yeah. I don't think it's, like, entirely out of the realm with all these cosmic dudes floating around. The point I would be disappointed is if you didn't see those guys anymore and it was just, you know, like, Ego, like, like, it was just whatever, you know? Like, we saw the actual Celestials, so if they didn't do them like that anymore, I would be more concerned.
He was way too talky for a Celestial. I like my Celestials silent.
Exactly. I always think of them as the as a silent type, but also with the like the fingers where they're giving you the thumbs up or the thumbs down.
So they're not giving me the finger.
Yeah, they communicate all in thumbs and fingers. They're giving you the whole sign language thing there.
Sometimes it's that sideways thumb that really leaves your head scratching until next issue, you know?
Yeah, you're like, which way is it going to go? And he starts going and he goes, no, I changed my mind.
Hey, you know, we should also mention, it's, you know, we always have new listeners on the show, and it's been many episodes now, and we're coming up to another milestone with episode 300 in a few installments. But hopefully we've got it on there. Is you notice David's intro to the show, and David A. Price has been promoted to our host emeritus, just as Stan is the chairman emeritus of Marvel. When the show began, even back before then, well, let me go way back. First the Earth cooled, and then the dinosaurs came.
Oh, jeez, Casey. Right.
Well, but there used to be the Bullpen Bulletins podcast, all right, with Vince and David. And that all ended when Vince retired from podcasting forever. And so David started Marvel Noise because he still wanted to make some noise about Marvel, and this was the perfect vehicle for that. It was pretty much just him and Pat Loika at the beginning, and the shows were about 25 minutes long or so. David would regale us with a couple of recent reads, or maybe run through an issue of an old comic book, complete with Hulk growls when necessary and appropriate.
Rawr. Rawr. Rawr.
And Pat would run down like what was out that week in the comic shops, often on the way to the comic store. And it was a weekly show for quite a few years, actually, until we couldn't keep it up anymore, and we decided to have more in-depth content and make the show go bi-weekly like it is now when we're firing on all cylinders. But then 11 o'clock comics started with Vince and David and Chris and Jason, although not right at the very beginning. David's job at the same time was becoming more demanding, so he started asking for contributions for listeners to send in segments to make some noise about Marvel. And the show became and sort of an anthology podcast of different segments sent in from listeners. There was Chris Chavez, Equinox, who would give us some old Marvel tales, calls from Carlos, Backwards Dave had his Bring 'Em Back and his like ridiculous moments in like the past week's comics. Adam Bessignotti used to talk about some trades and things, and there were some other guys as well. And I eventually got roped in, started to participate. As others started doing less, I started doing more, pretty much. And as David became more distracted by EOC stuff and able to do less for the show and occasionally not able to host the show, I just started picking up more of the responsibilities and having different guests on. I started coming back to my regulars like you, Kevin, and Andrew. Then you guys started doing segments yourself, and the show pretty much became David introducing the show and then it just getting to us doing our thing. Well, recently you've probably noticed that David hasn't been doing those intros at all. And, I mean, he's been busy with 11 O'Clock Comics started their website side of things as well. So I know he's been busy with that. But really what the issue has been is a couple of years ago, with my having this benign brain tumor thing, this vestibular schwannoma I got going, that leaves me a little weak in the head sometimes, especially in the evenings and times where I would have previously been doing things like editing podcasts and things. It became harder and harder just to meet deadlines and to get recordings in and to get them to David in time for him to do his thing and put the episode together. So I was getting into this time and time again, hitting this wall where I was saying to David, oh, it's coming, you know, and it's like Sunday night and he still hasn't gotten it yet. So it just made more sense for me to put the shows out and I am going to finagle some more contributions from David, because we're not letting him off that easily, especially with some of our anniversary shows coming up. We've got a 300th episode, and then in early September, it'll be the 10-year anniversary of this here podcast. So that's cool. Also, there's the piece that David and I have never appeared on a podcast together at the same time. We've been on this show, but never talking together. It's all been the magic of podcasting. So at some point before, it's one of our bucket list things to do before David rides off into the sunset and lives the life of Stan Lee's retirement, that we'll get him and I to come up with some segment to do together. So that's our spiel. That's kind of where we stand today in the state of the Marvel Noise podcast. But we do welcome, if people do want to send in any, have ideas for segments, you're welcome to send stuff in. We're happy to include them. Just because we're doing it all these days doesn't mean we haven't forgotten what this show used to be about. Does that make sense, Kevin?
That makes sense. Hopefully I'll have something else with Dan returning next episode.
There we go. That'd be fun.
We want to talk up some more Guardians, some Power Man, and Iron Fist. Which, funny enough, but it's a Netflix stuff.
Well, part of the thing with me, with my feeling, again, the best way to describe it is weak-headed at night, where I'm a little passive and not as able to really engage in narratives. My TV and movie watching has really taken a dive in the last couple of years too, and I'm only halfway through the first season of Daredevil of the Netflix stuff. Having two young boys too who stay up late at times doesn't help as well, because I know that stuff is a little on the hard side. So I'll be excited to listen to what you guys think about it.
You know what probably won't be on the hard side? That's a good segue, right?
I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm ready to hit the mute button and to X you out with a little bleep. Bleep.
Some of these upcoming Marvel shows. I know that a lot of people looked at that Inhumans photo of their costumes and everything, and they thought it was pretty rough. And I'm like, I didn't think it was that bad.
Well, you're a Canadian, so you don't know who. Potentially know who Kurt Warner, the quarterback, is, who used to play on the Rams. But that Black Bolt looks, in that picture, he looks like Kurt Warner. And then something weird's going on with Crystal, with like, it's a bad wig, I think. I don't think that's her hair. I don't know.
But it's like a magazine photo. I'm like, do these things ever, like, look that great? Like, I remember, like, maybe the Iron Man armor looking exactly, but that's like a suit of armor, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
like, the Inhumans, I expect them to have, like, a lot of special effects stuff added to them to improve the look. Like, things look weird when they're out of context, just randomly thrown, like, oh, this is what this looks like. But of course, if Black Bolt isn't going to wear a mask with the tuning fork, then I'll work.
He's got to have the tuning fork. That's important to me. It's part of the design. It's so cool. Why are they so afraid of the masks, Kevin? Like, I get not having a domino mask on Medusa. It was silly, right? It was the wrong. It didn't even match the color scheme of the rest of her costume in the comics when she had it. So I get no mask on Medusa, but. You know, I need my Inhumans to look exotic. They should be exotic and inhuman and strange, and I don't know. I don't need to be able to relate to them. But
I think you'll have to fight some people on that front with relatability in fiction and stuff like that. Like, I can understand when you're going to go with a magazine, like, you want to show all the actors and everything, like who's going to be in the show, so you might not have everyone in mask at that point. But if you don't do it ever in the show, I'd be like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I guess there's hope. I mean, it's Inhuman, so I will be checking it out, but
yeah.
It's the royal family. It's the only Inhumans I care about.
You know, the one that looks even better, though, is the Runaways, but that's because they didn't really have costumes so much. They were like teenagers in like regular clothing.
Right. Well, so
if you're gonna really screw that up, like you gotta be really trying hard.
even it was the same with the Inhumans. You know who I thought looked pretty good? Maximus the Mad.
Yeah.
You know. Maximus the Mad. I love that. Like Thanos the Mad Titan. Like I just love that when you're just. It's right in your name, you know? Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. You know, who are we?
And then I also saw the trailer for that Cloak and Dagger, which looked pretty decent, too.
Oh, yeah? There's a trailer?
Yeah. Where, they're not in costume. Like, there's a lot of, you know, drama and, you know, teenager-y high school type of stuff. But she starts producing, like, one of those, like, light daggers towards the end of the trailer.
Hmm. That's cool.
But you know what's going to be weird, though, is this Deadpool cartoon that's supposed to be on FXX.
What?
Yeah, they're supposed to do an adult cartoon. So I'm trying to imagine what they have already, like, the Archer cartoon and, like, merging that with Deadpool, because I'm trying to get some idea in my head of, like, what a Deadpool cartoon could look like.
That would be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
What would be cool is some of the different guest appearances they could have would be great.
Well, that's why I'm wondering how far they can go, because we found out, like, the Marvel alien races are sort of shared. So I'm wondering, like, how far you can go on a Deadpool.
I guess we'll find out.
Like, can you have Hydra Bob?
Why not? It's not going to be a Fox show, is it?
But that,
isn't it a Marvel show?
Yeah, but have you seen the ads lately in the Marvel comics? Like, they have some... Like, they have, like, the Madame Viper. And I'm like, wait a second, she was in a Fox movie. At that point, I got very confused. Man, I'm losing books like crazy with Marvel now. All the greatest books are going away. And I feel sad.
Yeah, when I see these new number ones pop up, I'm like, yeah, how many of these are just totally just intended to be a 5-issue limited series?
Well, like Kingpin was. But I, you know what's funny about Kingpin? I've heard people say, no, that story seemed like it was only going to be a 6-issue. So they were cool with it.
Well, I mean, I think going into it, a lot of these things are intended to just be short things. But they don't tell you going into it because they don't want to use... A limited series that kills a series.
Well, it does, but it also sometimes enrages people when it's only 6 issues. Like Nova, that wasn't a limited series. Like that was gonna transcend time and space, and then no one read it, and I was just like,
the new Nova series.
Yeah,
is that canceled?
Yeah, issue 7. I'm like, come on. I'm like, you. People love Sam so much that he got like 40 issues, and then Rich comes back and it's like canceled right away. I'm like, ugh. Comic readers are terrible sometimes. Retailers. Whoever's to blame. You're supposed to blame Marvel, right? Not retailers and fans.
True.
Blame everyone.
Hey, talking about my DCBS box coming before, have you seen this month's previews, the May previews for, what is it, July?
Yes.
And
a lot of good stuff in there.
In the collected editions, you mean?
Yeah.
The first one that jumped out at me was there's a second omnibus of the original... Well, it's not the original Clone Saga. It's the 90s Clone Saga of Spider-Man.
You're looking forward to that one?
No, but it's got the Sal Buscema Bill Sienkiewicz cover. I liked Sienkiewicz over Buscema.
They're also putting out, they're redoing all those trades, which then they'll just, you know, put into the omnibus.
And the other omnibus is a Deadpool and X-Force omnibus. And it's interesting that they're titling it that way, Deadpool and X-Force, because it's X-Force 19 through 31, which is the Greg Capullo issues, and then the first couple of Tony Daniel issues at the end of that. And then there's a couple of Deadpool limited series they throw in there as well. The Circle Chase and the first 8 issues of Cable.
Yeah, well, I guess they've had some weird situations trying to get those issues reprinted, right? Because they had like the premiere editions for X-Force, then they did the Deadpool stuff, and well, now if you want like the rest of, I guess they did one omnibus too, right?
I'm not mistaken. I think
the premiere stuff again.
Yeah, I mean the three premiere collections had all of the New Mutants, you know, the end New Mutants stuff when it started changing, and then it had up to X-Force issue 15.
Yeah, and then they did a Cable and X-Force trade paperback, I think, which I guess didn't sell too well. So now they're like retitling it Deadpool and like X-Force and all that. But like, if you already have some of those Deadpool issues, it's like you're double dipping on part of that.
Well, with the old collections going up to 15, and this one starting with 19, do you know what 16 through 18 are?
Executioner's Song.
Yeah, exactly. There, that's in, and so, with, and that was printed in an oversized hardcover already. So,
yeah, that, like sometimes we just want it all the way through, but I like that was the era where I'm thinking that you're probably not missing that much, and you wouldn't even be able to understand those issues.
You know what? I just want it for the Capullo art on the nice oversized paper like that. I'm going to grab it.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, I read all that stuff, but I didn't realize that was him at the time.
Oh, yeah, and I was kind of miffed at the time because they were pulling him off of the first book that he really got his legs under him on, which was Quasar, Mark Gruenwald's Quasar book. He was doing a good job on that book, and he, you know, Kismet was in the book, her, what do they call her now? She was in the Guardians movie, Alicia or whatever.
Yeah, she was also in a Fantastic Four run, which you never covered, Steve. Jeez.
Which one?
Fantastic Four sites, that was a run uncovered.
Which run?
it must have been the Claremont.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you and I want to do it sometime, we can. But I don't. It would take a lot for me to get me to revisit those LaRocca issues.
I remember reading that book for quite a while. I probably had maybe. It must be up. No, I probably skipped a few issues, in between Wade and whatever that was.
Oh my gosh! All that,
like Adam Warren, or like there was a bunch of creative teams where I was like sort of off and on the book, and then so I had an almost unbroken run anyways from the beginning of that Heroes Return stuff.
Well, the beginning was Lobdell and Alan Davis, Mark Farmer, but then when the LaRocca stuff and then Claremont started, and it got so muddy, like the Doom and Valeria stuff, and it was like, what is going on? And everyone's feet are so big, and oh man.
But Reed was Doom, and I'm like, this is cool.
That was weird.
Another classic Reed Doom fight, basically.
Also solicited for July. Oh, no, it's for November, even though it's in this month's previews. Is a Marvel Masterworks Incredible Hulk, Volume 11, that goes up to, isn't it, right around issue 200. Yeah, it's 184 to 196. And it is Herb Trimpe and Sal Buscema.
That's getting pretty far now.
Yeah, it is. It's getting to starting to get to the good stuff. After 200, I think it starts hitting a real sweet spot. Hey, and you know, I was just talking about that Deadpool crossover, the Death Do Us Part last episode. They're reprinting it as a collection and including the Spider-Man Deadpool issues and the Mercs for Money and doing that as a nice collection there. So that was smart of them.
I noticed the 29.99 is getting a trade as well.
Oh, the Deadpool 29.99 thing? Yeah, see, I told you, pull those issues right out. And the Avengers, Uncanny Avengers stuff with the Red Skull. The fate of Xavier's brain and all that I talked about last episode, that also is being solicited now, so.
And they're still chugging along with those S.H.I.E.L.D. trades. Like, that's why when you see the Cable Deadpool X-Force trades, you're like, Like that doesn't go like all the way through, but this S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff is just like a freight train.
And this was like more like a train wreck. the stuff that this covers, because it was the end of that 90s, or I guess late 80s. I think of it as the early 90s, but it was really late 80s Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, it's after the D.G. Chichester stuff. When, so like,
the guy that did the handbooks is, like, writing? Like, that's what it has in the credits here.
About the Elliot R. Brown?
Yeah.
Well, he was always the guy who did the schematics and the different maps and things about, like, the weaponry and all that sort of business. Funny.
Yeah. And then you have some, I guess maybe this ties in with, like, I'm always looking for the tie-ins. Like, why would they be reprinting, like, the Punisher Suicide Run? Like, I'm assuming get ready for the Netflix series or something like that? Because I don't know if this is, like, I don't think it's an often reprinted thing.
It's the one where, it's the story where they were all, like, other people were being the Punisher. So it's like the Lynn Michaels Punisher and that British guy who was the Punisher in the Secret Wars.
The Contest of Champions thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, okay.
That guy. It's got John Buscema art, Val Mayrick, Gary Quapis.
Boys, how are you doing?
Hey, it's Andrew.
I broke in, busted in.
Awesome.
Like a criminal and a thief and a no-good Blackheart.
Yeah, I guess we can't leave the collected editions without mentioning three epic collections.
No doubt. These are great. I like how they look on my shelf, and I like how they do them out of order, but they're taking the time to figure out where the volume breaks are and stuff. And we're finally getting a good collection of Operation Galactic Storm. Because they're willing to go big with these epic collections. Some of these are fat chunks.
Full color essentials, essentially.
But I'm psyched for the Operation Galactic Storm stuff. I think we should even read it in the future and cover it for this year podcast. Because it's been many a year since I've revisited this story.
Yeah, I think I bought the trades. So now whenever the trades come out, I always see where the break is. And sometimes like it lines up perfectly. And sometimes it's like that you're missing two issues. Or, like, it's covering two issues, and then you're like, I guess that's okay, like, whatever the situation is.
The other epic collection is a Thor epic collection in the Mortal Flesh, which starts off the beginning of the DeFalco Friends run of the late 80s into the 90s. I would say that this volume, wait for next volume. It starts getting good next volume.
Well, I guess they want to get those new warriors in here too, right?
Right. This has the first appearance. And some High Evolutionary.
Yeah, oddly enough, I only own one of those issues with the new warriors' first appearances here.
And the last epic collection is one that I definitely put on my list for my DCBS order for the month, and that's a Defenders epic collection, Ashes, Ashes. And it is the sequel to the one that just came out a few months ago of the that went up to issue 100. This gives us issues 110 to 125, which is the end of the Defenders as we knew them before it turned into kind of a next generation X-Men group.
Yeah, I thought you'd be all about this one.
It has great covers too. Oh, Sandy Plunkett and Sienkiewicz, and there's some good stuff. All right, Andrew.
The Overmind.
Yes. Well, that storyline's a little wonky.
I was just listening to that to the origins of the first appearance of the Overmind on the Baxter Building podcast, and I was like, wow. Because I know he showed. Remember, there was that Thunderbolt where we had some Overmind stuff.
Yep.
And I was like, what is up with this? Like, there's just something weird there you can't quite grasp. And then, like, there's some Eternal stuff, but not the Eternals. So weird.
Andrew, while we got you, been reading anything?
I have some. Been back on the number one train a little bit.
Ooh, me too.
Marvel, it's a train that never ends.
It's true. You know what I was thinking with these number ones, Andrew and Kevin both, that like we've talked about how they have the, almost this like seasons model where you sort of have a title that runs kind of in between events, and maybe the title stretches, you know, across an event and then to the next event, but often it's just a little in between thing. And then we've heard, you know, the marketing and the brass at Marvel talk about how they don't want to call limited series miniseries anymore at all, because that's a death knell to a book. So they're just letting series run its five issues and ending. So we're just getting a lot of series endings and a lot of number ones. But now that it's been happening for a couple of years, it's really starting to mess up like the collections, like the numbering and the naming for the collections and stuff, as far as the chronology goes.
Hmm. Well, that was, I don't think you could ever solve something like that perfectly. Like, someone's going to see volume 600. Like, that's not going to be good.
Well,
then you end up with, like, 25 volume number ones. Like, I don't know what you would do.
Just because you can't solve it perfectly doesn't mean you totally let it go into the toilet, though. You know?
I guess it would never be perfect.
Agreed. Fair enough. But I took Andrew's thought process and diverted it as I want to do. Andrew.
I jumped on, well, obviously I think I talked about Secret Empire 0, so I bought Secret Empire 1.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll stick with it in floppies or just wait till it's finished, but I don't have any big objections. This is the Nick Spencer, Steve McNiven, Jay Lester, Matthew Wilson, giant, huge. Listen to this. Look at that. All that comic book all at once.
That's a lot of book.
Hear that book.
My big beef, I guess, if we're going to get silly, is it just feels like this has all been done before. Maybe I'm just a tired old man, but I just feel like these events, some of them, I don't know how this is any different than Secret Invasion or Chocolate Rain or any of the rest of them.
Where's the beef?
Sort of like the children are all fighting amongst each other, and the good guys are bad guys, and this guy you liked is a jerk, but somehow he'll pull it out. And I just feel like, man, I don't know. I know we all enjoyed Secret Wars, and I guess that's one of the things I liked about it, was it felt like they weren't making a lot. I mean, they made Doctor Strange kind of questionable do, but at least, you know, you had bad guys and good guys, as opposed to we're just going to make all the good guys. And from a marketing perspective, I get it. Like, it sells. Like, the heroes are more popular than the villains, so they're going to sell. Like, I'm not a dummy, but I don't know. I just feel like they've been hitting that well so often.
I was not invested in this storyline. I was not looking forward to this event. But I, so far, the execution of it, I've been intrigued, and I'm anxious to find out what happens next there. I think they're telling a good story. It's not the story I want, but so far it's a good story, and it's I've been entertained more so than I thought.
I think that's
Andrew
where I'm at.
Explained why I skip like a lot of like the universe crossover events, because I'm like, those aren't for me. I'd rather be reading like Spider-Woman or something else. But I guess the most important thing is it's a good story if you're enjoying it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you in the fact that I think it's a good story, Steve, but I don't know, I just, like, it's well done. I'm just kind of like, I feel like they're not bringing me anything new, and it just feels like we've been in this loop with these guys for a while like that. But who am I? Like I said, it's well done. I'm probably going to keep picking it up, but I don't feel the same kind of, I really enjoyed Secret Wars, and I don't think this is Secret Wars level. Can I say that?
Well, as long as it's not Civil War II level or Original Sin level.
The bar is being lowered and lowered.
or Fear Itself level. Like,
oh.
I think those are that's the bottom of the
coolometer. We're getting to the bottom of the coolometer.
Exactly. If you had a coolometer of events, like,
I don't know. I'm hoping we've got this whole legacy thing coming up. Maybe they'll be able to recapture some of the glory days. But as we've talked about, it's not like, I mean, there's plenty of good books, but I wouldn't mind getting some of that urgency and some of that, you know, you got to read it now and you can't just let it wait and read it whenever you want. Like, you must pick up this book now.
While you're on the Secret Empire tirade, I should mention the Free Comic Book Day that was related to Secret Empire. It was a split book. It was Secret Empire and Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. And the Secret Empire bit was written by Spencer with art by Sorrentino, the guy who was doing the Old Man Logan stuff. And, you know, he has that, like, almost like a J. Lee, John Paul Leon kind of. Yeah.
Wasn't that the first, like, where I first experienced it, probably?
So he, you know, so that's an interesting art choice for a Free Comic Book Day offering that's going to push your big event. Wasn't very dynamic. It didn't have a lot of real sequential storytelling to it. It was a lot of stiff images. Graphically interesting, compositionally interesting. His shadowing and his, you know, he's an interesting artist, but odd way to push your event in a mass giveaway book. Then there was a weird thing. They showed Tony inside the armor again. That's the second time they've done this now. It's and
that's no accident.
Inside the 70s armor, you know, the early 80s armor where it's supposed to be, just where they show that shot of him, his head inside talking, you know.
Do 600, guys. Think about that.
Then the
600.
Then the other weird one was at the end of this, it shows Cap leading the Hydra gang onto Washington and beating down all the superheroes. And at the end of it, the narrative explains that they were more prepared and they won outright and they believe in their cause and they're worthy. And he picks up Thor's hammer. Cap does. Hydra Cap does. Picks up Thor's hammer. I mean, just because he wins a round in a dishonorable war and he gets the upper hand, that makes him worthy? I mean, Fury whispered in Thor's ear, and just whatever that made Thor think made him unworthy despite all of the good he's done to be able to not lift Mjolnir. And Hydra Cap lifts it up because he believes in his cause? That rang hollow. Really hollow.
It's going to be some fake hammer or something.
No, it was Thor. He knocked. It was Jane. Jane got beat down, and he picked up the hammer. It's the big climax of the Free Comic Book Day thing. It's like it's the big oh my gosh moment. He's worthy, and the text explains it. It's
I'm still holding out. I'm gonna get my no prize, Steve.
Nah.
I'm gonna fight this.
I found out why Thor was unworthy of the hammer, and it looped back pretty well with Thor history.
Yeah. Okay. But
I think it's from those old Journey into Mysteries where Jane Foster was such a frail and kept passing out and everything.
She did pass out a lot, but that gave Don the room he needed to operate. Hey, the other part of that Secret Empire I got to mention quick was this Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, like, preview story that has a funny conversation between Peter and MJ where she says his name without the hyphen and he gives her the business. I was like, oh, man, I totally thought about our fearless leader, David A. Price, on that one. And then
are certain other comic creators?
They fight the Vulture, Peter does, Spider-Man does, and the Vulture and Spider-Man both get, dare I say it, trapped by the new Trapster, Andrew.
No.
The new Trapster. And
there is no Trapster.
And Spider-Man says, are you like Trapster without an R? Are you like the new Trapster, like the new hip Trapster, you know? Or without an E, he said, like, or is this Trapster with the R? No. And she's like, it's a girl. And she's basically calls them both old men and walks out of there with the Vulture's money that he was robbing from the bank and leaves Spider-Man and the Vulture all gummed up.
With her beret and open bucket of paste?
She had leopard spotted shoes on. Thought that was odd. But
if we're being nadering nabobs while I'm loving Iron Fist. Number three, we still don't have the rabbit character. The eel, the rat, but the snake. Like, when's the rabbit showing up? You're killing me with this.
Be one panel.
No, it's the finale with it's like 23 pages of battle.
Yes, yes, that's what I'm looking for. But I'm still on board. Still on board with Unstoppable Wasp. Like, I'm still getting books, people. I mean, it's just hard for me to get to the store. But I do have a few number ones to talk about briefly. I know Super Steve will have one of them. Black Bolt number one.
Read it.
Saladin Ahmed, Christian Ward. Kind of. Black Bolt seems like the quintessential. This character is great as a supporting character, not really sure his own book.
Yeah.
I mean, almost arguably the force of nature, literally with his power set.
I like the angle that they took where they weren't going to really give you insights into his thoughts, then use more of that. They didn't go as far as like those original 70s Iron Fist stories where the caption boxes are talking to Iron Fist actually and telling him how he feels. But I thought that they did a pretty good job for a character who can't talk and they're not really going to reveal his thoughts. They did a pretty good job of using the caption boxes to move his story along. And I thought they did a good choice. They pull him completely out of... He's trapped in this asteroid prison. You're basically learning as he's learning kind of what predicament he's in and how he's trying to get out of it. And we'll see how far they can go with that. Wasn't too bad.
You think I should get it?
The environment, it felt like a mashup of almost, Sienkiewicz and Ditko, I felt, a little bit. It was kind of the physics of the place being sort of spacey and wrong, but the sort of impressionistic Sienkiewicz kind of distorted figure work and panels kind of being dragged and stuff like that.
With Sienkiewicz it seems more deliberate, though. With this, I felt like this guy was maybe this artist maybe is more of a like a background artist, like a storyboardy type of artist or something, because the form work was really I mean, the anatomy and the proportions and stuff I thought were really off. But other times, like the tech and like the backgrounds and the environment were really pleasing.
I didn't mind the sort of... I thought the face work was kind of rough. We only have one person's clear face, good old Crusher Creel. And I thought his looked a little...
And what's he doing there?
Interesting.
What's Crusher doing there? Come on.
You know, with the Black Bolt's weird outfit and the big bad being a weird guy, you can get away with a more graphical interface. And you're right, they had to be pulled out. I'm kind of curious. I just feel like, what do you do with a character like Black Bolt? Well, he's super powerful, so either you put him against other superpowers or you depower him, which is what they decided to do, at least to start this.
And honestly, I'm sick of seeing Black Bolt in chains. Like, they've been doing that since the mid-70s. But I didn't think it was overall bad. I read through it and felt like it went from point A to point B, and it was, I'm going to pick up the second issue and check it out. The cover was great. I like the cover a lot.
Curious also, Black Bolt, to me, so much of him is defined through his relationship to the royal family. And by severing that, he's kind of on his own. It also makes it like that would probably be his second, to me, his defining feature. One is the sort of can't speak force of nature, too powerful for his own good. The second being like put upon duties as royal and his and so they've moved both of those. So I think that's an interesting idea. I guess the royal family has been pretty well not what it was back in the day anyway, so why mess with that?
I'd like to see a team-up book with Black Bolt and Namor. Like, these both, like, arrogant, stoic regents, leaders, kings, royals, but yet one likes to do all the talking and the other one doesn't talk at all. It would be fun.
Yeah, I thought you mentioned someone had the clever idea of teaming him up with Dazzler, didn't they? So that she could take his power and
turn it into... Exactly.
Seems like a clever sort of... just. But yeah, you're right, like a real chatty character with the... Well, that's the Rocket and Groot dynamic, right?
Did you read the first Rocket issue?
I did not make it to the store, but I did pick up the all-new Guardians of the Galaxy because that was at the store, and I knew you'd get that because it's your man.
It is.
And I liked it. I thought it was a fun... I feel like this property is maybe... This is heresy for a Marvel Noise podcast, but maybe overextended?
only because they kept Bendis on the book too long. I think very quickly they should have pulled the plug on Bendis being on the book, because here you had a property that had nothing but attention on it and had everything going for it, and when they whipped out that new number one with Bendis after the movie came out, I thought it was a big flop. I thought the whole and then they got all off course with the Angela stuff, and I thought the whole thing was a mediocre book at best. Everywhere else in media and in toys and everything, the Guardians are taken off, but yet the book, meh. And part of it, I think, is their relationship with Bendis, that they kept him on it or whatever, but now that's getting a new chance. I ask you to hold off on feeling like it's overextended. I just think we haven't had consistently told decent stories with the Guardians. Even Bendis broke them up so much that it's like, what, you can't tell a story with them together? Like, come on.
Well, I think that's where I like them the best. I felt the overextension might be each one of them seemingly has a constant churn of ongoing titles. And I feel like maybe we don't need a Rocket, Gamora, Drax, Star-Lord separate titles, plus at least one, probably more than one, ongoing Guardians book.
Yeah, they were all just minis, though. All those side books were all just minis that weren't labeled as minis, though. So, you know, I can see that, too, wanting those collections on the shelves before the movie.
Star-Lord got canceled, so I think they were intending that to go more issues than it did.
But how can... I don't know. I feel like it's... I know their strategy is clearly, like, clog the shelves. We don't have a Batman, so if we just physically take up the room, then we'll get the sales. But something tells me, I mean, I don't want them to par down to 20 titles or anything, but a bit of a retrenchment might help focus and bring that, like, this is a book you have to read type of urgency to it. Like I said before, I feel, well, I'm enjoying this stuff. Like, sometimes it piles up or I don't get to the store and I don't feel particularly angst about it. I can just be like, yeah, it'll be there in another week or whatever.
You gotta get the Gamora for the artwork, remember?
Yeah, but that's also going to be a finite series, as was, I mean, even this Rocket number one that just came out, that's come off the heels of a 5-issue Rocket Raccoon limited series that wasn't titled such. So I think this is just going to be, I mean, this current one, the number one that just came out, it's Rocket and Mojo's TechNet. And it's probably going to be a story, and when it's done, it'll be a new series.
Like, I don't expect, like, a Rocket title to go, like, 100 issues. Like, I expect a Nova title to go.
And that last Rocket series, before we get back to the Guardians, the one that was Rocket Raccoon, the Matthew Rosenberg-written one, that one was cool. It had Kraven the Hunter hunting Rocket. So that had some fun. Like, it was... The way they drew Rocket and some of the back and forth between him and Kraven, it was almost like a spy versus spy thing at times. Like, one of the things has Kraven walking, like, with Rocket throws a rocket down Kraven's shorts and leaves him blown up there, and walking away, Rocket's got both hands up with the peace signs, waving them in the air, and it just had that, like, you know, white spy walking away from black spy, you know, being injured, happily walking away in the last panel kind of a thing. But that was a pretty good little series. I enjoyed that. Who doesn't like Kraven? But how was Jerry Dugan's...
Cooter and Savoresina, and it's fun. It's what the Guardians, I think, should be, which is... you know, kind of rogues. They're pulling a heist. But as always, in any good heist thing, it goes wrong. Like, the heist goes well, but what's surrounding it doesn't. The person they're pulling the heist for pulls a fast one on them and embroils them in more Elders of the Universe.
Ooh. Drama. Huh.
Well, and the movie is crazy and imaginative, so in, like, this scenario where sometimes like the comic, you know, is influenced by the movie, I would kind of want the comic to be like that too.
Dugan is really good with that interpersonal stuff and making the nice quips back and forth. And let's face it, if you've seen the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 movie, it's pretty sophomoric and in its dialogue, and there's a lot of one-liners back and forth between the characters and stuff. And writer Dugan has a nice capability. I mean, that's right in his wheelhouse.
Well, so I enjoy the oversized preposterousness of the set pieces in the comic, which I haven't seen the movie, but I would be surprised if they do. Like, one of the guys' bases is inside a giant fish. Mm-hmm. So they, like, get eaten. Their ship gets eaten by a huge carp type of thing, which might be in the movie for all I know, but that's the sort of fun visual elements that I think works best with the Guardians and works best with the comics. Like, I don't... Minor spoilers, but they set up... The heist is done by they have a fake Galactus.
Nice.
And so when Galactus lands, like, everyone runs away and the head splits open and they jump out. So that's the perfect kind of, you know, the movie's never going to have a giant looking Galactus dude that lands down, like classic Galactus, you know, in the head. So I love all those wacky visual elements that are comic booky. The only thing I wasn't, and this might be movie influence, but their depiction of the champions lately, or Elders of the Universe, doesn't really... I liked when they were a little more outlandish looking. And this one, we're dealing with the Grandmaster, and he just basically looks like kind of a blue guy with white hair instead of like really wacky looking, you know. But that might be because I don't know if he's in the movie or going to be in the movie or whatever. So they want to keep it more regular.
Yeah, I thought he looked pretty wacky for anything upcoming in Marvel Entertainment.
Thor, right? He's going to be in the Thor movie, I think.
Yeah. Like, wasn't boring. Let me put it that way.
I would have went with something. I like when they kind of make them not just a human with different colored skin, in other words. You know, like kind of either preposterous outfits or bizarre shapings to their limbs or things like that. So it felt like, yeah. I mean, it's not a bad design. It just feels kind of, oh, come on. We got giant fish bases and...
Any Darkhawk in that issue? I had... just curious.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, there's a mysterious character at the end that it's all in shadow, so I don't know.
See,
you know, there's places like that where I don't, you know, it could be the laying of the groundwork.
Because in the other Free Comic Book Day offering Marvel gave out was a Guardians of the Galaxy and Defenders book. And the Guardians piece was written by Dugan with art by Cooter. And I haven't read the first issue yet, so I wasn't sure if some of the material was synonymous between the two. But, I mean, I thought there were nice touches. I mean, even like Baby Groot does a thing where he like jumps up and pokes a guy's eye out. But like then they show him in another panel like playing with the eyeball, which I thought was funny. But they hint at this Nova Corps Shi'ar Raptor war. And they have a cloaked figure who is the Raptor. And he's like, this Nova Corps that's getting set up, you know, if you give up being a Nova and go back to your home planets, we'll give you safe passage to your home planets. But if you stay here, we're going to wipe you out because we're already the police force out here. So I'm wondering, the Raptors, that's all that DNA, Abnett and Lanning, Darkhawk reimagining where one of the Raptors kills Lilandra, the Magistrix. So they're gonna do something with that, and maybe Darkhawk will be back.
Yeah, but the thing is, DNA set up a perfect status quo. Then they blew it up and replaced it with something that wasn't as good. So is Dugan gonna try to like redeem that stuff then?
He honestly, and I right now he's my Hickman, where he hasn't done any wrong yet in the Marvel Universe. Where I trust. I'm putting my trust in Dugan. We'll see what he does. I did not like the whole Raptor thing of Darkhawk and everything, but you know what? Dugan might have a good take on it and give me a few laughs along the way.
Yeah, I think it was fun. I imagine it seems like the perfect kind of complement to the movie, where you're not just going to ape the movie. You know, Cooter's doing slightly different. It's not like he's trying to make the characters all look exactly like they do in the film and everything. I haven't seen it. Maybe they do, but yeah, I think it's just like, oh, this is like the comic book side of it. So I would recommend it if you like it, and I think it's smart of Marvel to have one that's like, I hope they keep this kind of self-contained.
Yeah.
And this could be the marketing thing to push for people who don't want to buy 10 titles, but just are kind of curious about the Guardians, which I feel like they don't always do great about.
Yeah.
When everyone talked about The Walking Dead, like, you like it, oh, here's the comic, so it makes it easy, as opposed to here's one version and then here's the next one and they rebooted and here's the spinoff and here's the tie-in and don't forget when they crossed over with this or whatever. So cautiously optimistic, because I think Guardians has proven it can be a big franchise for them.
In that Free Comic Book Day issue too, you know what else they did that made it connect with the movie is they have them stealing a ship to escape the predicament that they're in, and the ship they steal is the Milano, the one that they have in the movies and they have the Lego sets of and everything. It's pretty funny.
Smart move.
Yeah.
All right, boys. I am excited to hear the rest of Marvel noise, but I think I'm going to exit stage left quietly.
Bye, Andrew.
Talk to you guys later. All right, let's see if I can turn off.
I think he turned it off.
Yeah, there he goes. His little picture went away. All right, now let's get serious.
I got a cosmic book for you.
You do? I have two more number ones, though. While we're doing the number ones.
This is a number one as well.
All right, your turn then.
I got Royals.
Oh.
It's about the Inhumans royal family.
Yeah.
I think I've always sort of dug, like, their spacefaring adventures.
Yeah, like, I thought that was cool.
Down with the Kree.
I mean, they did it slowly. The first burn puts them on the moon, right? And that led them open to more contact with space-oriented things. Like, sometimes when intergalactic threats were coming to Earth, they passed by the moon first. You know what I mean? So, like, something would happen on the blue area and all that business. They were close to where the Watcher was. So there was that piece. There was that connection to the old, base that was there, the old Shi'ar base that, you know, the X-Men fought when Jean Grey died back in 137 on the blue area of the moon and all that stuff. So there's some history of that area of the moon, and Byrne putting Atalan there, taking the Great Refuge from the, you know, Arctic and putting it there, I thought was a great idea. And then whoever was brought them out into space, was it DNA or someone along those lines? That was cool stuff. The War of Kings, maybe? Was it with that stuff?
Yeah, I'm going to say it was with that stuff.
Were they, like, weaponized Atalan and turned it into, like, a missile shooting at the Kree homeworld? That was cool.
I think it was a secret invasion. Wasn't there a crossover of the Earth secret invasion event and then, like, the cosmic event was sort of...
You're right.
Like, their issue bridged, like, those two crossovers. The Inhumans going to the Kree and everything.
You're right.
Yeah, because I think they had all that Terrigen Mist stuff. Hey, how about that? All the way back in the day where, like, it was stolen and all that, and then they went to space. And Quicksilver was just a terrible guy.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, the whole thing with the Skrulls, and then he blamed his behavior on the Skrull when it was actually him. Like...
Not good.
Anyhow, I haven't bought an Inhumans book. Well, I bought one. I should say I bought one Inhumans book in like the last 5 years, basically.
You're a good judge of character.
Like, I know the some people like stop trying to make that happen, and I know some people like one Inhumans book but not the other. Like, it never seemed to gel really. But this Royals one, this picks up right after all the recent madness. Al Ewing was the writer, and then John Boy Mayers is the artist. I don't know, he kind of reminds me of, I guess, what attracted me to the Uncanny X-Men when, like, Joe Madd was drawing that book.
Mm-hmm.
And now, since he's come over from the Distinguished Competition there, I get to enjoy some of his work, and I'm like... I think there's enough of a style there for me to go, oh, yeah, I can really, really enjoy this. and see him grow and change into whatever. So they're just basically wrapping up all their stuff on Earth. Like, there's basically, like, the last inhuman, like, shell. Remember those were all over the place?
Yeah, the cocoons or whatever.
Yeah, so basically, like...
The pods.
Yeah.
The pod people.
One of the... This is, like... I guess it's been, like, a few months or whatever. Like, the Inhumans' activity has sort of been, like, ramping down on Earth. And, like, this is, like, the last one. And this person comes up and there's some kind of, like, big monster slimer type of creature. So they deal with that type of stuff. And then they happen to be... Like, the lineup here is, like, the royal family, but there's some of the new guys as well, because I don't really know who they are.
Yeah. Marvel Boy. Right. The intro thing, though, it was very X-Men in its execution, right? It's almost like they're going to locate a new mutant whose powers started showing, and they don't know how to control it, and they're there to say, hey, you actually belong to this larger family, and we're here to help you and to help you through this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they were ripping off the X-Men again. There's also this whole future sequence where I'm like, I don't know what to... Like, if all this stuff is going to happen or where that's... Like, where that really fits in right now.
Well, it's in the future, so it doesn't fit in right now.
But it might parallel something that's happening today, or they can change something, or however they go about it.
You can't change the future.
Because they're ripping off the X-Men again, because it's the last of the Inhumans, and it's like when the X-Men were going extinct. Like, they're like...
Yep.
They're sort of, like, doing some of that type of stuff, too.
Funny.
But Marvel Boy, since things happen... Because he's from another universe, and not all that, you know, craziness.
I don't really know. Hard to get a beat on that guy. I think, you know what I liked him best was when some of the weird interactions he had with the characters in New Avengers when Bendis was handling him. I gave him some grief earlier, and now I'm giving him a little praise.
But he mentions how he's sort of been bouncing around, and he didn't find his way in our universe. Like, he was even hanging out, like, in space with Kate Bishop, Hawkeye.
Right.
So, you know, he's been around. So he says that there's something in his universe that could help out the Inhumans. So they're like, well, why wouldn't it work out in this universe type of thing? So they're on basically a quest, however long that is, and if they get there, if that propels the story to somewhere else, there might be something in the ruins of the Kree homeworld.
Haven't they learned that the Infinity Gauntlet from the other universe doesn't work in this universe?
So, like, it seems like there's potential. It's a good setup, but I'm not, like, sold on it yet. But this could go some interesting places.
I agree. I'm going to check it out as well. I read Jean Grey number one.
Mm.
Now, I admit my bias. I don't care for the 05, the original 5 X-Men being in the current times. But in this Jean Grey issue, I did like that the Wrecking Crew was in the issue.
Oh,
I was like,
a lot of
and they introduce a Phoenix mystery. That it's like, okay, and then they seem to really advance it. It's not just like, here's the first little blip. It's like, here's like a few pages of like a Phoenix form, like engulfing Jean and talking to her. And she's like, I'm not that Jean.
Well, I was thinking of, remember when Wolverine the X-Men restarted with Latour and they had that whole Phoenix plot? You were just like, the Phoenix again?
Yep.
So as soon as I saw this, I thought of you.
I didn't like... The artist wasn't necessarily lousy, but I didn't really like his depiction of Jean. And part of it is he's got a, you know, he's trying to draw her young. He draws her too freckly, too pepperheady. She's like too Pippi Longstocking or Raggedy Ann-ish for me. something didn't vibe. It didn't seem like Gene. It was an all right book. It just doesn't seem like Gene. And I know it's not that Gene. I know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? And she's kind of evolved differently than the other Gene. I was going to try this out just on the strength of Spider-Woman.
I also read Weapon X, number one.
This is where the story, I think, would have to pick up the slack for me, because I'm like, it's Greg Land.
Yeah. And I am not the biggest fan of revisiting the whole Weapon Plus stuff. Like, I think it's been done to death. And I think there have been a few real good takes on it, too. And I've been pretty satisfied with it and happy to put it behind me. But Weapon X, there's something going on where old man Logan is attacked by these, like, robots with adamantium blades. He seeks out Sabretooth, who also got attacked by similar agents, and so they have to team up and figure out what's going on. Someone's going after the Weapon X weapons and trying to collect them. And also, I admit that I don't really care for old man Logan in the main Marvel Universe either. It wasn't a bad story. It wasn't bad, but it's just not, it's not what I'm, not anything I'm looking for, but I'm going to check out the next issue or two just to see how it pans out.
Yeah, it's so weird with all the Weapon X stuff. It's like Black Widow with, here's another secret from my past. Like,
right, right. Once they added Phantom X in, it really made things weird.
I generally like Phantom X, though, so.
Oh, me too. Very much so. While we're on the X-Men kick, can we just talk quickly about how, kind of where the X-Books are now in the aftermath of AVX and IVX and all that sort of stuff? They're trying to get back to the basics, it seems.
That's why I was scared. I'm like, I don't want them to go too retro. Like, I want us to move forward. So I thought it was going to be interesting if I read these and if I would, like, read one and toss it out because I'm like, oh, this is too old. And then
And then
someone else would be reading this and they'd be like, oh, this is perfectly my era. But it wasn't really for gold anyways. It wasn't really either one necessarily.
Well, they did a point one issue type of a thing, like how Marvel has done the point one issues that sort of kicks off the next bunch of titles. They did an X-Men Prime issue, which is funny because X-Men Prime was a thing back from the old, like, Apocalypse, Age of Apocalypse stuff. So that was a one-shot, and then that kicks off the X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue, and the Weapon X books. It gives you a little tease, a little taste of each one of them, pretty much. I like that they're going to split them up, though. I mean, I already said I don't really like the 05 X-Men in the current Marvel Universe, so let's get them right out of there. Let's make them the blue. Let's make all of the regular continuity X-Men gold. And then we got the Weapon X book. In the gold book, there's a character called Prestige. Who's flying
around. Costume.
It's a terrible costume. There's a it's like a half domino mask with that's like John Sable freelance type like domino mask thing. And a costume that's like almost like a female version of the original Hyperion costume or something. Yeah. It's bad. And it turns out it's Rachel, Kevin. It's Rachel Summers.
I like her, and I liked her previous costume. And, like, no one else has, like, really costume issues. But this is what is going on with the,
well,
with Rachel there.
Let me tie it to what we were saying about getting back to basics. This in this X-Men Gold series, we have Kitty Pryde as the leader, and the writer is Mark Guggenheim, who I'm hot and cold with. I often generally like his stuff, but then there's like parts of what he writes that I'm like, just can't deal, right? Like Wolverine being reduced to the spot of blood and regenerating and all that kooky stuff that he does.
Yeah.
Black Panther whooping Captain America and all that stuff. He has a nice, he wants an old letters. They want to try to bring the book back to the old days. They want to have a letters page and stuff. And so the first issue, he has his little writer editorial page at the end where he gives his little spiel. And he opens it up I like his angle. He's like, we're getting back to basics in the sense that we're going to stop having these big, giant event things that matter, that are going to, like, that they're fighting for extinction and the whole population has to be together to try to fight off some. They're going to get back to, like, telling villain of the week type stories where they can sort of breathe a little bit, the characters. And I think breaking them up in this way is a good way to do that. Get back to being superheroes. And that's where the costume piece comes in. He even mentions in his little soliloquy at the end how he, like, he wants... Well, the X-Men used to have the coolest costumes. Thank you, Dave Cockrum. And that's what he wants. He's like, and then he mentions it again in his closing. We want to get back to cool costumes and straightforward storytelling and you know, all that business. So on that front, that's cool. I didn't like how he really inserted his politics pretty heavy.
Well, it,
in there,
why don't you mention that? But, since other politics are inserted into
this. Yeah, well, right. This is where the writer, the artist, snuck in the verses of the Quran or whatever, but and then you know put the one passage number right next to Kitty Pryde's head, who happens to be a Jew, right? So they didn't like all that, but on the art front, some of his panels, Syaf, were really nice, but I'm kind of okay with him being off the book because in general I thought his art is pretty stiff. Some things happened in the book that I thought were cool and intriguing. They did a Brotherhood of Evil Mutants bit. Among them was Amara. Do you remember her from the New Mutants, the lava?
Yeah.
Chick? And it was like, wow. And then there was an Avalanche and a Pyro. And I'm like, aren't they dead? I hate when they keep coming back. But they quit.
He's mentioned, like, the villain in the issue is dead, and I'm like, no, he was in Hickman's Avengers, so.
Right. They brought back Mesmero, and the Pyro and Avalanche are just posers. So I was like, I was okay with that. And Amara was mind controlled by Mesmero, which I was okay with that too. And then, as much as I don't like Old Man Logan, there was a great Old Man Logan story beat where Mesmero and the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, the new Brotherhood, have Old Man Logan all tied up, and he takes them all down and then, like, calls on a cell phone, just like, hey, come pick me up, to the X-Men who are, like, trying to figure out how are we going to find them. And then all of a sudden it's like, ring, 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 and it's Old Man Logan. He's like, hey, come get me. But then that's how the one issue ends. I think it's how issue two ends. And issue three starts off with the complete, like, that didn't happen. Like, that shows issue three starts off with him fighting the Brotherhood and losing to them, Old Man Logan. And it's like they didn't make any mention of it. And it's the same artist and the same writer, so it's not like something weird. Like, I don't. It really begins in a completely other way, as if the other issue did not end that way. Which at first I was thinking maybe this is going to be a clever, like, Mesmero thing, where, like, Mesmero made him think he won. But no, that was never really indicated in any way. I thought it was, and if that was the case, that was sloppy.
Yeah, because I know Mesmero made people think that he was dead before.
Sure, I would if I was Mesmero, try to recoup my reputation. But there were, between, like, the Prime issue and the Golden Blue issues, there were some inconsistencies because of the different art teams. Like, in the Prime issue, you've got Aurora bald with her mohawk, but then in the Gold issue, she's got, like, really long hair, including, like, maybe coming from her temples, you know?
Does she use those, like, she has a wig on or something? Sort of puts it in there?
But they do the opposite with Nightcrawler. In the Prime book, just like the last several issues of X-Men, you've got Nightcrawler with the ridiculously unkempt long hair. But then in the Gold issue, he's got the short hair, like, you know, we think of him as having. The Blue issues I also read. I thought the art in that was really inconsistent. The faces at times are really manga-ish and other times not manga-ish at all. Sometimes they're really detailed. Sometimes it's like the colorist is trying to make up for the lack of rendering. And some of the faces, like the head's turned, but the features aren't turned the same way as the head is, which just jumps out as, like, sloppy digital work to me. There's a Juggernaut mid-issue splash page of him bursting onto the scene that is has such bad foreshortening on it. I mean, the proportions are really, really sloppy. I know it's Juggernaut, so you have some license to be exaggerated, but nah, man, not like this. Not like this. There's some other weird stuff. The Angels got those, like, mechanical stick wings that shoot the fire out of them, which are kind of a little silly. They bring in Magneto. They bring in Bastion, that old Nimrod character, which I was...
Oh, yeah, I'm very familiar with him.
I always liked him as Nimrod. I thought that was a great name. Right up there with Taserface. Come on, Nimrod! And the other thing that was really inconsistent with the art is that the characters' heights relative to each other shift across the first three issues, like, majorly. I don't know if we're just looking at a depleted bullpen with some of this stuff, but I'm glad I'm not really sold on wanting to, you know, be really connect with the blue, because I didn't really care for the art there. So I think I'm going to stick with the gold book and read that as to see kind of keep up what's going on with my X-Men.
Yeah, it's funny. I sort of went on a rant before about the X-Men books before this, like, not really having a purpose, or it wasn't really going anywhere. And then they seem to, like, be making jokes about... Maybe I'm just thinking too meta about... But it seems like there is jokes purposely in some of this stuff. Like, talking about, oh, well, we kind of lost our way or whatever. I'm like, yeah, you did. So at least, like, they set out here what they're supposed to be. Whether they achieve that goal, we'll have to see.
You mean it was telling when Aurora said to Kitty that she just... got back from leading the X-Men on a pointless war with the Inhumans?
Yeah, stuff like that, Steve.
That's funny.
You see the two, I got this in X-Men Gold, number one, two in one issue.
Any other issues of anything to fire off, Kevin?
Some series I sort of alluded to that were wrapping up. Like, I know Black Widow had the 12th issue, and that completed well. Like, that, I just think that's a good run. That's not, like, there's elements in there from, like, Original Sin or whatever, but I don't think you really need to, like, oh, I got to read Original Sin for this. So it's a good, like, 12-issue chunk that I think you could read, and you don't really need all this other stuff to read with it.
Yep, I found that enjoyable. Although I find, like the Cap book, the Steve Rogers Cap book, I found myself glossing over the flashback scenes. Mm. Like, I don't care about the Red Room. I don't care about Steve Rogers as a kid and his mother becoming a Hydra agent. That isn't even going to hold up, you know? Like, enough of that. Just tell me, just give me Natasha riding a motorcycle and taking down, you know, somebody in a glider or something.
I don't know. I was just really, really taken by Black Widow. And you would say, but weren't you bothered by that thing when it went too fast? And I was like, not really, no. Like, I wasn't stopwatching the whole series. So
my,
like,
issue with
just, like they went to the moon and they did all that other
yeah.
cool stuff. It's just like,
she got stabbed too much, though. That was my one criticism. A little too much getting stabbed.
See, I don't think it was too much stabbing, like, just the right amount of stabbing. Like, in other books, like, they'll be like, oh, this, like, they've trained themselves to peak human potential, and then they got stabbed 10 times, and then they fell in the water, and they're down there for 40 minutes, then they came up, and they got stabbed again. Like, in that situation, I'm like, that's too much stabbing. So Black Widow was sort of riding the line, and I thought it was just the right amount of stabbing.
It was a deep stab, though. That one was going to leave a mark. All right, what else you got?
I think that's about it.
My 12-year-old son picked up the new Guardians of the Galaxy mobile game that's on the mobile devices. And it's from Telltale Games. And they recently did over the last year, a Minecraft-related game called Minecraft Story Mode that was like a video of the character of Minecraft characters doing stuff, and almost like a choose-your-own-adventure type of thing. At various points, you would get the opportunity to steer the story in a direction by making a choice. So now they're bringing that same exact format to the Guardians of the Galaxy material. It's like $5 or $6 to get the first episode, and then after that, I think you can buy each episode for that price, or you can buy them all as like a season pass for like another $15. So you're talking about like a $20, $21 commitment to get the whole story. And the thing is, the episodes, there's 4 or 5 episodes. I think it's 5 episodes. And the episodes are going to be released in the future, like over the course of the next year. So it might be like a month or two till the next episode, and then a month or two until the next episode, that kind of a thing. So and they take up a lot of space too. I see that it's come out on Xbox as well, where with a disc, where you just get the first episode on the disc, and then you have to buy and you can download, which also would take up a lot of space on your console if you are tight on space. Watch out for that. I know that happened to us with this Minecraft Story Mode when we first did that. So, but my kiddo did the first episode and he enjoyed it. It was a thing where you are Star-Lord and the Nova Corps warn you that Thanos is coming, and there's a big battle between the Guardians and Thanos, and seemingly Thanos is killed. And then you have to make a decision whether to sell the corpse of Thanos to the Collector or give it to the Nova Corps. And that steers, you know, are you going to be the outlaw, black markety, or are you going to, like, turn the body over to the authorities kind of a thing? So you get to make those types of calls and how you speak to the Nova Corps guy, whether you're cooperative and respectful of his authority or you tell him to, you know, go fry salts or whatever. And then the Guardians all get drunk and split up. And that's kind of when the episode ends, shortly after that. So the animation was good. My kiddo was like, can we get the other episodes? And I haven't decided yet. I think I might play through the first one to check it out and decide.
The previous catalog had a Telltale Guardians comic.
Is that right?
Yeah, so I don't know how that's going to, you know.
It might come down to whether Thanos has ribs on his upper lip or not. If he does, nah, I'm out.
Yeah. That's a comic that I haven't been keeping up with, but I've only been hearing good things from people. So,
The Thanos book?
Yeah. I don't know. I seem to always see people talking about it, so that's good.
Let's read it for next time. It's got to be a few issues on the Marvel Unlimited already.
Maybe. I don't know. Is that issue 6 now, right?
Yes.
Six or something?
Yes. Well, at any rate, you can come back next episode, and we will cover Power Man and Iron Fist 85 to 92 from the early 80s, as well as a bunch of recent reads. And I also should mention that the Albany Con, the kind of old school hotel lobby, small scale con that Albany has twice a year, is happening on Sunday, June 4th, my birthday. And the usual crew will be there of Ron Mars and Joe Sinnott, Fred Hembeck, Steve Orlando, Joe Staton, Mark McKenna, Paris Cullins, and Paul Harding, who's a sculptor who has done like Marvel Legends figures and DC figures and maquettes and statues and stuff. He does great stuff. But they have a good little rotunda of little artist alley and vendors and stuff. And it's not a con to really travel 2 states across to get to. But if you're in the upstate New York area or in the western Massachusetts area, come on by for a fun little one-day, cheap admission, old-school con. And with that, we'll regroup. We'll separate to our corners, Kevin, and we'll come back out fighting next time.
That's probably a good idea, because I thought it, just a casual talking episode would be less time, and now it's looking a little late.
We did it, though. We had a lot to talk about. Hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. We'll get back to the real features next time on our march to episode 300. Woo-hoo!
First Venom.
I'll tell you about Machine Gun Kelly. He rode along the outlaw trail. Machine Gun Kelly was a simple man, but the woman was as hard as hell. Watch out, Machine Gun, don't let her run you around. Don't let a woman put you 6 feet in the ground. Machine Gun.
Yes, indeed.
I'll tell you about Catherine Kelly. Tired of being such small time now. Figured they'd kidnap a rich man's son, make it in the world a crime. Watch out, Machine Gun, don't let her run you round. Don't let a woman put you 6 feet in the ground. Machine Gun. Better watch out, Machine Gun Kelly. Careful of what you do now. If you keep a listen to your old lady, ain't no telling what'll happen to you now. Machine Gun. The government boys that came for Machine Gun took the poor boy away. Stuck him in a hole in 11-word prison where he lived until his dying day. Watch out, Machine Gun, don't let it put you down. Don't let a woman make you out to be a clown. Machine Gun. Watch out, Machine Gun.